Shalom, everyone. I'm Josiah Jeffrey.
I'm Hosea Jeffrey.
And we're back studying the Torah portions. This week we're looking at the portion Vayechi, which is the last portion in Genesis. It goes from Genesis 47:28 to 50:26. We've already read the portion ahead of time, so if you'd like to read it as well, why don't you go ahead and pause the video right now, and then we'll go ahead and get into discussing.
Vayechi contains the last words and blessings of Jacob to his 12 sons, as well as his death and burial in the land of Canaan. Finally, Joseph grows old and is laid to rest in Egypt, with the hope and promise of returning to the land promised to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob.
So this portion begins with Jacob, or Israel, having lived 17 years in Egypt with his sons, now being 147 years old. So seeing that he was going to be dying pretty soon, Israel called his son Joseph and said, "Please make sure that they don't bury me in Egypt. Make sure that I'm buried in the family tomb back in Canaan, the same tomb where Abraham and Isaac were buried." So the fact that Jacob was like really insistent, "Do not bury me in Egypt, swear to me you will bury me back in Canaan," it just reinforces that Jacob knew that Egypt was not his home. Even though he was now sojourning in Egypt and he was well settled in Goshen, in Egypt, they were prospering there, but he had this expectation, Canaan is our home and will always be our home, and that's where I want my final resting place to be.
Even after Joseph says, "Yeah, I'll do that," Jacob still says to him, "Swear it to me." He's just trying to get across to Joseph, "This is really important to me. You have to do this." Shortly after Jacob makes clear his plans for his burial, Joseph learns that Jacob's fallen ill. So he goes to meet him, and he takes his two sons, Manasseh and Ephraim, who were born to him in Egypt. When Jacob sees Joseph, he starts by saying, "God blessed me with the blessing of Abraham," basically. Mm-hmm. And he talks about God's promise to him that he made at Bethel.
It calls it Luz here, but Luz is the same as Bethel.
The promise to say, "I will make you fruitful and multiply you. I will make you a company of peoples and will give this land to your offspring for an everlasting possession." And Jacob says to Joseph, "This promise was to me and to my offspring after me. And I'm going to count your two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, as my sons." Mm. So they're going to be direct recipients of that inheritance. He's putting his two grandsons
on a level with his sons.
On a level with his own sons, so that they can receive the same inheritance that the sons will receive. The result of this actually being that Joseph will get double inheritance, because both of his sons will receive a full inheritance.
Exactly. Later in the Torah, we'll see that the double portion of an inheritance is part of the birthright of the firstborn. And later in 1 Chronicles, we'll read that basically the right of the firstborn, at first it belonged to Reuben because he was the firstborn son of Jacob. But because of actions that he did, we'll read more about that a little bit later in this portion, but because of actions that he did, he lost the right to the firstborn, and that was given to Joseph. And so what we're seeing right here is that the blessing of Ephraim and Manasseh specifically to give Joseph that double portion is basically Israel saying, "You get the birthright of the firstborn," which is interesting because Israel himself wasn't a firstborn. He got a birthright that belonged to his older brother. And likewise, Isaac was chosen over the firstborn Ishmael. So this is a pattern that we're seeing going forward. And we'll also see it more with Ephraim and Manasseh themselves. But that's getting a little bit ahead of ourselves.
So in response to this promise to elevate Joseph's sons, Joseph then presents his sons to Jacob. And Jacob says to Joseph, "Let me bless them." And he kisses them and embraces them. And he says, "Joseph, I never expected even to see your face again. Now I'm seeing your sons." And he attributes that to God's provision.
Yeah, God let me see your children as well.
And so in that joy, he then places his hands on the heads of Joseph's sons, and he proceeds to bless them. And the blessing with which he blesses them says, "The God before whom my fathers Abraham and Isaac walked, the God who has been my shepherd all my life long to this day, the angel who has redeemed me from all evil, bless the boys. And in them let my name be carried on, and the name of my fathers Abraham and Isaac, and let them grow into a multitude in the midst of the earth." Mm. So like you said, that right of firstborn is being bestowed on Joseph's sons. Jacob is directly blessing the two sons and saying, on them let the name of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob be carried forward. Mm. They will bear the inheritance of that name and that and all the promises that come with it.
Wow.
But the most peculiar thing about what he does is that when he places his hands on the sons to bless them, he crosses his hands such that his right hand is on the head of the younger, Ephraim, and his left hand is on the head of the firstborn, Manasseh. And he does this to give Ephraim the greater blessing of his right hand. Mm. And Joseph says, don't do that. This one's the firstborn. Put your right on his head.
There must be some mistake. No, no, no. It goes like this. And Jacob says, I want it this way.
I know. I know. He's very intentional. The younger brother is to be greater. And this is a reflection of what we've already seen. How Isaac was greater than Ishmael, Jacob was greater than Esau, and Joseph was greater than his brothers. And now, Jacob is deliberately, explicitly saying, the blessing's going to both of them, but the younger is chosen to be greater. Mm. And so this younger one, Ephraim, it's very interesting because later on in Israel's history, the entire northern part of Israel will come to be known as Ephraim.
10 of the tribes.
10 of the tribes named for Ephraim because of his supremacy, because Jacob gave to him that birthright. Mm. Jacob is going to bless each of his sons in turn, and they're all part of the chosen nation of Israel. But this blessing establishes Joseph and specifically Ephraim as unique in their carrying of the legacy of Israel.
And that's also why, in addition to the northern kingdom being called Ephraim, it's also called Israel. When the kingdom was split, it was Judah and Israel. So through the centuries, Israel was carried on through Ephraim. So after Jacob has blessed Ephraim and Manasseh specifically, as a form of blessing Joseph, he then calls the rest of his sons to bless them all before he dies. And he gives a blessing to each one of his sons individually.
These aren't just blessings. Jacob specifically says, gather yourselves together that I may tell you what will happen to you in days to come.
So these are prophecies.
These are inherently prophetic. And not all of them are particularly positive. Mm. But they are called blessings, and they're all indicative of what each tribe's fate is going to be.
And the first that he starts with is his firstborn, Reuben. We touched on this particular prophecy in a previous portion, but what he says to Reuben is, you are my firstborn, my might, and the beginning of my strength, preeminent in dignity and preeminent in power. Uncontrolled as water, you shall not have preeminence, because you went up to your father's bed, then you defiled it. He went up to my couch. So we had read previously that Reuben slept with one of his father's concubines. And so now Jacob is saying, because you did that, you've lost what was yours. You had preeminence. You were my firstborn. But you are uncontrolled as water. You don't have self-control. And so because you don't have that self-control, you don't have preeminence. So this just shows a really good lesson, which is that if you don't have self-control, then you'll make horrible decisions that will end up costing you in the future. So the story of Reuben is just a reminder to all of us that we need to control our actions. One of the fruit of the Spirit is self-control. And so if we're walking in the Spirit, then we won't lose what God has given us.
Paul says in 1 Corinthians 9:25, "Now everyone who is striving for the prize is self-controlled in all things. These indeed do this then, so that they may receive a crown that is perishable, but we strive for an immortal crown. I therefore run this way, not as one running uncertainly. I fight this way, not as one beating air. Rather, I beat down my body and bring it into slavery. Otherwise, having proclaimed to others, I myself may become disqualified." So Paul is saying, you need to have control of yourself and of your body. You need to beat yourself down into slavery and submission to God because you're trying to receive a prize, an inheritance. Reuben became disqualified from receiving the inheritance of the firstborn because he didn't have self-control. But if we have self-control and dedicate ourselves to single-mindedly pursuing the immortal crown, then we won't be disqualified and we will receive the prize and the inheritance.
So after speaking to uncontrolled Reuben, Jacob then moves on to Simeon and Levi, his next sons. And he says, "Their swords are implements of violence. Let my soul not enter into their counsel. Let not my glory be united with their assembly, because in their anger they slew men." And then he says, "Cursed be their anger, for it is fierce. I will disperse them in Jacob and scatter them in Israel." So this is hearkening back to the incident with their sister Dinah. When Dinah was defiled, Simeon and Levi's response was to slaughter an entire city. And so now Jacob is saying that, like Reuben, their actions have consequences. And in their anger, they've made it such that Jacob himself doesn't want to enter into their council or be united with their assembly. Jacob wants to distance himself from his sons because of their anger. And because of their anger, they'll have the long-term consequences of having their inheritances in Israel be scattered among the land inheritances of their brothers. And so this blessing really speaks to the concept that Yaakov, or James, talks about, where he says, "Be swift to hear, slow to speak, and slow to anger. For the anger of a man does not accomplish the righteousness of God." If we are acting in our own anger and just trying to make restitution on our own behalf, trying to take vengeance ourselves instead of leaving the vengeance to God because vengeance is His, then it will cause people to distance themselves from us. It will cause harm to us long term, and it won't accomplish the righteousness of God.
When Simeon and Levi had done that, Jacob said to them, "You've brought trouble on me, and you've made me stink in the eyes of the inhabitants of Canaan." When we take it into our own hands to execute vengeance in our anger, we don't accomplish righteousness. We can't see all things. We just create more problems. We cause unintended consequences to innocent people. Paul and Yeshua tell us a better way. Paul says, "So far as it is in you, to live in peace with all men." And Yeshua says, "Happy are the peacemakers, because they will be called sons of God." It is much better to seek peace rather than vengeance and anger. Because, as Yaakov said, it does not accomplish the righteousness of God. So next, Jacob gets down to his fourth son, Judah. And this is the first son that he actually blesses good things. It's the first one he doesn't have anything bad to say about. We've seen Judah was not a perfect guy, but we also saw that he came around in the end.
And we've also seen that Judah has already proven himself to kind of be a leader among his brothers.
And so Jacob's blessing for Judah is kind of in line with that. He begins with a sort of play on words. He says, "Judah, your brothers shall praise you." The word Judah comes from the word meaning praise. And so Jacob is now saying, all your brothers are going to praise you. And you'll attack your enemies.
And your father's son shall bow down to you.
Before you. Which is interesting because previously we had seen all the sons of Jacob bow before Joseph. Now Jacob is saying, all my sons are going to bow before you, Judah. And then he says, the scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor the ruler's staff from between his feet, and to him shall be the obedience of all the peoples. So Jacob is promising authority to Judah. That's the blessing that's being given to Judah, is authority over all his brothers, and more than that,
over his enemies and all the peoples.
And he promised the scepter. So the rulership, ultimately the kingdom over Israel, is being prophesied to go to Judah.
Now, in the midst of this here is a little bit of a ambiguous possible messianic prophecy here, where it says, the scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor the ruler's staff from between his feet, until Shiloh comes, and to him shall be the obedience of the peoples. So this phrase, until Shiloh comes, is ambiguous in the Hebrew. People don't know exactly what it means. It might be until tribute comes, or until he comes to Shiloh, or until he comes to whom it belongs, or something like that. But whatever the case, some people do think that whatever Shiloh is here is basically saying the scepter is going to be in the tribe of Judah until eventually it's handed to one person, Yeshua. And he's the one who will have that scepter of rulership forever. And to him, Yeshua, shall be the obedience of the peoples. So whether or not that's the explicit meaning of this until Shiloh comes phrase, this is prophesying that the rulership and the kingdom of Israel, which will rule all the peoples, is from Judah. And Yeshua, the Messiah, is from Judah. So Yeshua is a fulfillment of this prophecy.
Yeah, this definitely is talking about Yeshua in so much as it's talking about the scepter over Israel and the obedience of all the peoples to him. We've seen before promises to Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and to their seed, which are specifically fulfilled in Yeshua, which have to do with possessing the gate of their enemies and such. This is now here as well. Jacob is promising to Judah's seed that his hand will be on the neck of his enemies and the peoples will obey him. And not only to him, but to the one to whom the scepter will come. From his tribe. From his seed.
So then Jacob proceeds to bless his other sons. And he says some relatively short blessings for each of his sons, Zebulun, Issachar, Dan, Gad, Asher, and Naphtali. We won't get into each of those individually because they're relatively short and some of them are pretty vague, although some of them do have a little bit of wordplay in the Hebrew. But we're going to go ahead and skip down to Joseph. When he gets to Joseph, he basically says that Joseph is going to be extremely fruitful, but people will be attacking him and harassing him. But the hands of the mighty one of Jacob, the shepherd, the stone of Israel, will be with Joseph, and the God of his father will help him. And then Jacob pours more blessings on him, saying, Shaddai will bless you with blessings of heaven, blessings of the deep, blessings of all sorts of things.
He says, the blessings of your father are mighty beyond the blessings of my parents. May they be on the head of Joseph and on the brow of him who is set apart from his brothers. Once again, like we've said before, Jacob's giving the primary blessing to Joseph. He's saying, the blessings God gave to me are greater than the blessings God gave to Abraham and Isaac, and now I'm giving all of them on the head of Joseph. So Joseph is really becoming that successor of the inheritance of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. When it says, the archers bitterly attacked him, shot at him, and harassed him severely, yet his bow remained unmoved. His arms were made agile by the hands of the mighty one of Jacob. When I read that, I see that as talking about what's happened to Joseph up to this point, where it's talking about all the hardship Joseph had to go through, from his brothers hating him and selling him into slavery, to the wrong he suffered from false accusations from his master's wife, to being sent to prison and forgotten. I think that classifies as being harassed severely.
Yeah.
But through all of that, he remained unmoved and faithful to God. Mm.
And it seems basically that this will serve as a pattern for the future, because Jacob preceded all of these blessings by saying, I'm going to tell you about things that are going to happen in the future. And so basically, Joseph's descendants will go through something similar. Even though they're blessed and fruitful, they will be attacked and harassed. But God will be with them, and they will remain unmoved. It's interesting because the tribe of Judah is the main tribe that's left today. We talked earlier about how the kingdom was split, and one of the kingdoms was named Ephraim. That kingdom was taken over and destroyed and scattered, and their descendants are basically unrecognizable to this day. Yet, at the same time, God promises in Ezekiel 37, take for yourself one stick and write on it, for Judah and for the sons of Israel, his companions. And then take another stick and write on it, for Joseph, the stick of Ephraim, and all the house of Israel, his companions. Then join them one to another into one stick, that they may become one in your hand. Behold, I will take the stick of Joseph, which is in the hand of Ephraim, and the tribes of Israel, his companions, and will put them with it, with the stick of Judah, and make them one stick, and they will be one in my hand. Behold, I will take the sons of Israel from among the nations where they have gone, and I will gather them from every side and bring them into their own land, and I will make them one nation in the land on the mountains of Israel, and one king will be king for all of them. So, yes, Ephraim and Joseph are gone right now. We don't know where they are. They've been scattered. But God here is promising he will bring them back. Despite how they've been assailed and shot at with arrows and harassed for millennia, to the point that we don't know where they are, God will reunite them with Judah. And there will be one king over them. That one king being Yeshua. So, the promise to Joseph is still in the future to this day. The fruitfulness still needs to come about, and it will come about once God reunites all the tribes as one rod in his hand.
Jacob put the promise of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob on Joseph and Ephraim. Mm. And that promise includes the promise of the land. And so that promise will not be fully, completely fulfilled until what was prophesied in Ezekiel 37 comes to pass, when all the sons of Israel associated with Joseph and with Ephraim are brought back in that land to live alongside Judah under the scepter of Judah, which is in the hand of Yeshua the Messiah, the one king over them all, the one nation of Israel. So after Israel had finished blessing all 12 of his sons, he gave them one final command to bury him in Canaan, in the cave that Abraham had bought all those years ago. He had already made Joseph swear it, and now he says before all his sons to make sure they do it. So he's really stressing how important this is. This is his last wish.
Right.
He says, there they buried Abraham and Sarah, his wife. There they buried Isaac and Rebekah, his wife. And there I buried Leah. And he also had hewn a grave for himself there. And so with this final command to his sons, Israel, son of Isaac, son of Abraham, breathes his last and is gathered to his people. Israel has died, and the nation of Israel has been born.
Upon the death of Israel, he was embalmed by the Egyptians, and they mourned him for 70 days. And with permission from Pharaoh, Joseph and the rest of his brothers took the body of their father back to Canaan. And it says that aside from their flocks and their little ones, all of them went back to Canaan to bury Israel, along with some of the servants of Pharaoh. So at this point, almost the entire people of Israel are now going back to the land of Canaan to bury Israel. Israel has already been fruitful and multiplied by this point, and they're much greater than they were when they went in. And this will be the last time that the people of Israel will be in the promised land for 400 years.
This is the last time that Israel's 12 sons set foot in the promised land of Canaan, and none of their descendants will set foot in that land until God has fulfilled what he swore to Abraham, that they would come out of Egypt as a great nation with many possessions.
So after they finished mourning Israel, everyone returns back to Egypt, and Joseph's brothers at this point get scared because they think that with Jacob gone, Joseph will still bear a grudge for his brothers having sent him into slavery all those years ago. And they fear that Joseph will get some payback or something. And so they send a message to Joseph saying, Jacob said, please forgive your brothers. They did you wrong. Please forgive them. And so then the brothers say, please forgive the transgression of the servants of the God of your father. And when Joseph hears this, he weeps. He's moved by this. And then his brothers come and bow down before him and say, we are your servants. So again, going back to that first dream that Joseph had all the way back, those two dreams about his brothers, his whole family bowing down before him, they're bowing down again and asking for forgiveness. But Joseph says, do not be afraid, for am I in God's place? As for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good, in order to bring about this present result to preserve many people alive. So Joseph, at the end of all these years, he's basically reiterating, you didn't do this, God did this. You intended evil, God made it work out for good. Paul will later say that God works all things together for good to those who love him and are called according to his purpose. Joseph is basically saying, yes, you did sin against me. You did sin against God. You did do evil. But that didn't stop God from doing something good out of this. God used your sin to bring about something good.
And equally importantly, Joseph also says, am I in the place of God? So going back to what we said about Simeon and Levi, unlike them, Joseph isn't going to take vengeance into his own hands. Joseph is saying, God is the only one with the right to do that. Mm. When we take vengeance into our own hands, it has unintended bad consequences. But when we leave it up to God, we see that even men's intended evil consequences, God can use to bring about good. So it's the exact opposite. And so Joseph is submitting to that. And so he is telling them not to fear. And he's returning what they did to him all those years ago with kindness, with
and
provision
forgiveness.
And forgiveness. As if there were any doubt left, Joseph has sealed final closure with his brothers. Mm.
And so after this, years go by and Joseph himself gets old. And he sees the third generation of Ephraim's sons. So that's his great-great-grandchildren. And then he says to his brothers, I am about to die, but God will surely take care of you and bring you up from this land to the land which he promised on oath to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. God will surely take care of you, and you shall carry my bones up from here. So Joseph's last act before he dies is an act of sureness in the promise of God. He says, we are going to go back to Canaan. For an unstated reason, Joseph isn't able to get buried in Canaan. Jacob was able to get buried in Canaan, but Joseph can't. He's buried in Egypt, and he asks, take my bones with you when you leave. Presumably, it's possible that the slavery in Egypt had already started even. We don't know. But whatever the case, Joseph could not go back to Canaan for his final resting place yet. So, as Hebrew says, by faith, he commissioned his brothers and his sons to take his bones with them when they leave. It's not if you leave, when you leave. And as we'll see, 400 years later, they do take Joseph's bones with them when they leave.
But in the meantime, Joseph's bones are left waiting for the great exodus of his people. So I would say the big takeaway of this portion is also kind of the takeaway of the whole book of Genesis. And that's to believe and follow God's faithful promise and immovable plan. Mm. Jacob and Joseph, both with their final words, expressed faith toward what was to come and a certainty of the fulfillment of the promise that God had made. And not only them, but Abraham and Isaac as well. All throughout Genesis, it's the story, even going back to Noah, of people believing in God's promises and his rescue plan and following, doing what God says because they know that his promises will come true. And that should be the example for all of us. All of these figures are great heroes of faith for us to follow. And they exemplify the way for us to live because our promise is an everlasting inheritance with our Father through our Master Yeshua the Messiah. And if we follow when he says to follow, if we stay when he says to stay, if we fight when he says to fight, if we wait when he says to wait, if we believe when he says to believe, then on account of that alone, his promises will come true. We will receive the inheritance and the blessing and the promise of God.
That wraps up the portion of Vayechi and the book of Genesis. Next week, we'll be discussing the portion Shemot, the first portion of Exodus. So be sure to tune in for that. Thanks so much for watching. Be sure to like, share, comment, subscribe, and hit that notification bell to keep updated on new episodes. And if you would, please consider sending us a donation to help us make more videos like these. We would really appreciate it. Thanks again for watching, and we'll see you next week. God bless.
Vayechi. Vayechi, vayechu, vayecha, vayecha, vayechi, vayechu, vayecha, vayecha, vayechi, vayechu, vayecha, vayecha, vayechi, vayechu, vayecha, vayecha.